go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Minute past the hour, and welcome to Thorn in the Side Thursday on the Horn. Pardon me if I'm a little bit addled right now for some reason or another, and it is a reason I do not fully understand. I've got next to no playback at all coming through the playback channel. Which is really, really weird. Of course, I updated Windows 8 last night. Windows for landfills, as I like to call it. Deeply frustrating. But I don't know where the damn playback went. Oh, brother. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday on the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. And we welcome you to it. All of us do. The Horn Family Commune. At HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, you can find a number of things. You can find access to the Listen Live stream. You can find access to the chat room. And you can find access to how we go about keeping this whole operation alive and on the air. Yeah, see, Randy says, I hear you on iTunes on my Mac, but the music is faint. Yeah, well, this is what happens when you update to Windows 8.1 for landfills. Oh, for heaven's sakes. Now, anyway, the PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. So, too, is the traditional mail address if you want to help out. We're still working our way down to... working our way through matching Randy's kind start of December contribution and his generous gift. And at this point in time, we need about $100 to match it, which, well, $150 is our fundraising goal on any given evening. So that works out nicely either way. So if we could make that happen, it would be wonderful. Unfortunately, I can't do much about the playback because God only knows where those settings are on Windows 8.1 for landfills. No, it is Thorn in the Side Thursday, and I think we've got plenty to work with. Of course, I don't think we should start the program any other way except to note the passing and the mourning and the grieving of the death of Nelson Mandela. Truly, a person like Mandela, well, is is the measure of that question as to whether one can say, upon having completed one's sojourn, one's incredibly, incredibly short human sojourn upon this planet, whether one can say, I left it better than I found it. And that is certainly the truth in Nelson Mandela's case. And his better than I found it can be measured by the millions, by perhaps the hundreds of millions, and perhaps by the billions of people to whom he served as an inspiration. Unlike Gandhi, unlike Dr. King, Nelson Mandela got to live out the fullness of his mission. And even that is somewhat surprising, because I am sure somewhere along the way, if they could have at all possibly gotten away with it, the apartheid government of South Africa would have just as soon seen him dead. Even that, staying alive, just that bare, central element of being human, getting to stay alive, even that was monumental when he was clearly not intended so to do. So we remember the goodness and the determination. And the profoundly positive effect on this little blue-green time machine hurtling through the universe that Nelson Mandela had. And although it may seem somewhat hollow, I know I share in some measure the grief that the South African people have for their loss. But in so many ways, their every moment, their every living moment, is a glorious, monumental, memorial celebration of his life. So, wherever it is that the candle flame goes, when the candle blows out, a safe journey to Nelson Mandela. Dr. John pointing out, now that Nelson Mandela has died, how long before BuzzFeed makes a gallery of 25 cats that look like Mandela? Sometimes I hate the internets. Yeah. Jim noting, may he rest in peace. Jude noting the same. Jeremy asking, could you expand a little bit on apartheid? Yeah, sure. Apartheid was a system of racial, race-based discrimination that was formally enshrined into governmental structures, in which people of, and you know, it's hard to talk about apartheid without talking about race, and it's hard to talk about race without talking about what a steaming pile of shit the concept of race is. Race was, the very concept of race was invented by white people when they needed to divide themselves between us and the rest of the world. And apartheid created an entire subgroup of citizenry in the nation of South Africa. It is worth remembering that for a time, in the beginning of his career, Mahatma Gandhi was a lawyer working in South Africa, and he got his some of his earliest taste of the brutality of the British Empire there in South Africa, because South Africa was broken down. South Africa was separated between white people and coloreds. And white people meant basically what it said, British, Western Europeans, and everybody else on the planet. Anybody who was more than two shades darker than, an albino was colored people. And they used all the regular stupid rules that racist regimes use in order to enforce it. No participation in the electoral process, no participation in the civic life of the country, brutal repression of anybody who spoke out, separate facilities, apartheid South Africa, in many ways, made the segregated American South look somewhat mild. Ah, how nice. This comes from Shorty in L.A. Shorty in L.A. noting, the world is a better place because of Mandela's birth. Now, his death may remind us of who we should be. Top 10 Nelson Mandela quotes. 1. It always seems impossible until it's done. 2. I am fundamentally an optimist. Whether that comes from nature or nurture, I cannot say. Part of being optimistic is keeping one's head pointed toward the sun, one's feet moving forward. There were many dark moments when my faith in humanity was sorely tested, but I would not and could not give myself up to despair. That way lays defeat and death. 3. For to be free is not merely to cast off one's chains, but to live in a way that respects and enhances the freedom of others. Contrast that, number 3 there, contrast that, for instance, against libertarian philosophy, in which, hey, ain't no chains on me, you got chains on you, screw you. That's your problem, not mine. My chains ain't got no chains. Otherwise known as igumfu. I got mine, F you. No better explanation of why libertarianism is such a dead act than that. Number 4. No one is born hating another person because of the color of his skin or his background or his religion. People must learn to hate. And if they can learn to hate, they can be taught to love, for love comes more naturally to the human heart than its opposite. Number 5. After climbing a great hill, one only finds that there are many more hills to climb. One learns the truth of that in a place like Appalachia, even. You get to the top of a hill, and you find out it's hills as far as the eye can see. Except the ones that have been blown up. Number 6. The greatest glory in living lies not in never falling, but in rising every time we fall. Got to get up. 7. There is nothing like returning to a place that remains unchanged, to find the ways in which you, yourself, have altered. 8. If you want to make peace with your enemy, you have to work with your enemy. Then he becomes your partner. 9. I learned that courage was not the absence of fear, but the triumph over it. Woe. The brave man is not he who does not feel afraid, but he who conquers that fear. And that, of course, reminds... Yeah, you know, I think I mentioned it. You know what Ferg went into the GED repeating time after time after time. I had him learn it. One of the few times that I've been successful in saying, here, son, here's a thing I would like you to memorize. Memorize it. Be able to repeat it at the drop of a hat. We'll be checking in. I must not fear. Fear is the mind killer. You recognize it, right? Fear is the little death that brings total obliteration. I will face my fear. I will allow it to pass over me and through me. And when it has passed, I will look back where the fear has gone. Only I will remain. Yeah. Courage is not the absence of fear, but the triumph over it. The brave man is not he who does not feel afraid, but he who conquers his fear. And 10, education is the most powerful weapon which you can use to change the world. All of these are profoundly true. Yeah, thanks for the elaboration, Irish Dave. If memory serves, there were actually three main classes, white, colored, and black, American in the apartheid system. American Pius Jindal would be colored, and Barack Hussein would be black, though he could be promoted to colored if he was really a nice boy, though white would be out of reach. Jim noting, subject line, for coloreds only. Bob, I found an abandoned gas station in South Carolina years ago, tore down the sign upon which was written, for colored only, for both sexes. I still have it, for it speaks volumes. Jeremy, we can all only hope to hope to have a tenth of the influence that Nelson Mandela had on the world in our own short lives. But in making the attempt is the measure of character. Jude pointing out that Nelson Mandela also said, a good leader can engage in a debate frankly and thoroughly, knowing that at the end he and the other side must be closer and thus emerge stronger. You don't have that idea when you are arrogant, superficial, and uninformed. You don't have that idea when it's all about winning and losing. It's those damn dualities. Those damn notions of some sort of binary universe that makes ever so much of a problem. Irish Dave saying, what works for me is remembering it's only a movie. It's only a movie. Race as a social construct reached its most obvious peak in South Africa, meaning that there may be other less obvious peaks out there as well. Randy trying to help out a little bit with whatever this audio issue is. Make sure you plug the output into the headphone speaker socket and not the microphone socket. They're usually the same size on most machines. That's true. But no, that's not it, because there's a whole lot more sockets involved than that. No, this is something that happened overnight when I upgraded to Windows 8.1 for landfills. And if I felt any confidence at all, which I do not, in being able to find... Oh, there it is. Okay, let's have a little peek here. Bob, why didn't you just test? Because I didn't think I had to test it every... You know what? I got to test this every night. Let's try this part. Okay. Be our problem. Let's just check.
Okay. South America.
We're not really restarting the program.
Here we go. Head on.
No, that was not the problem, but we will eventually find it. Aha. Try again. Maybe some better. And why would this thing change all the damn defaults? Here, let's try the closer. Y'all tell me, is that any better? Ay. Yeah, it had defaulted. It had changed the default sample bit rate, among other things. Rotten bastards. Anybody, was the audio any better in the chat room there? Thanks much if you want to let me know. So anyway, thanks for the input from Shorty and from Jude regarding the passing of Nelson Mandela. Thanks to everybody who dropped me a note to make sure that I knew that he had gone on. Much appreciated. If you want to elaborate on the meaning of his life later in the program, you are welcome so to do. But we'll move into some other things at this point in time. Oh no! I almost hesitate to open this one. Okay, Jeremy's saying, better, almost normal. Randy noting, that's louder music, but not quite as loud as it used to be. Thank you, Randy. With the default bitrate reset, your voice never sounded better. I'm just happy I wasn't sounding Martian a couple of minutes ago. Oh, okay, thank you. Thank you, Jeremy. 8.1, yes, when I updated it, it reset some of the more pain-in-the-effing-ass features of 8.1. Well, it wouldn't be Microsoft if they didn't. No, what I said I was a little hesitant about looking into, an update from Dr. John. Early right-wing reactions on Mandela's death. Dr. John says, I'm on this, so no one else has to be. Been reading the comments on the reports posted to a couple of the right-wing news sites. Oh. From the vile and fetid toxic swamps of Free Republic. Red Badger said, lucky for him he didn't have Obamacare or he would have been dead long before today. Eternally with Muammar Gaddafi and Yasser Arafathead, I suppose. That's what a facepalm sounds like. You heard that, didn't you? He was a loud and proud Marxist with a thug gangster for a wife. Oh, stay classy, right-wingers. Stay classy. And then from over at the mercifully still-dead Breitbart site, Uncle Sam says he was a communist terrorist white hater that would make Obama look like an American patriot. That almost begs for the Charlton Heston voice, doesn't it? Another one said, another wingnut calling himself GOTC is the new Star Wars. I'm not going to waste a brain cell trying to figure out what GOTC is. White said it good before Mandela came. We were prosperous, wealthy, and we even decided to help the very blacks that were wearing thongs for clothes by giving them jobs and shelter. We won the land by right of conquest. Get over it. Only by our good graces have we allowed you to live on it. If I were the blacks that had won innocent white... If it were the blacks that had won innocent white children would have been killed in their sleep. And Fred, it just goes from bad to worse. Over at Alex Jones's site... Another person says, and I use the term loosely, person. Another mass murderer, terrorist, communist, and racist bites the dust. It is a shame he wasn't necklaced like so many were by he and his wife and their minions. Here's another one from InfoWars. One commie racist who destroyed one whole Western society goes to hell. I'm so happy this shit is dead. And from someone calling himself herself 2015, this says a lot. How do you know that he died today? Did the media provide you with any real proof? Well, I would expect no less from Alex Jones's minions. A note from the shores of the Puget Sound. You are coming in perfectly. Just sounds lovely, shores of the Puget Sound. But they are such a classless and filthy lot, we are to expect, frankly, I'll be honest, it's not that I'm not, but I'll be they wouldn't be the right wing if they didn't say things like that. They won the land by right of conquest? Where does that concept even come from? Right of conquest. Isn't that... something that, white folks invented too? Or at least first put into word? I don't know. But what a delightful expression of the trampling of human rights, the taking of human lives. Oh, we want it fair and square. We killed you for it. Right of conquest. That's like trial by ordeal. Isn't that something that remains back in the first millennium? Along with witch burning? Nevertheless, here in 2013, we won it by right of conquest. Still remains an official government policy with at least one government on this planet. And, F the people who still live on that land. Oh, for heaven's sakes. Yeah, because... Okay, thank you, Irish Dave. Just wanted to make sure. Right of conquest is a well-known concept of European origin. He notes, of course, in South Africa, the invaders mostly enslaved the native population. In America, the invaders mostly killed them. And by America, I count by America the entire hemisphere. I'm funny about the word America that way. In what, 1519, the population of what we now know as Mexico was around 20 million human beings. By 1560, it was less than 4. So Irish Dave is right. That's not to say the Spanish didn't try to enslave the native peoples. They just were much more effective at killing them. And that's somewhere around 16 million human beings they were successful at killing. I mentioned the other night that with the white arrival in the Western Hemisphere, there were peoples who had never even so much as seen a pale person who suddenly saw their village die out from under them. And there's, among other places, there's proof of that in Mesoamerica. Not North America, not South America, Middle America, Central America. An epidemic of monkeypox brought by white folks broke out in, I believe, 1512, long before Hernan Cortes ever landed first on the Yucatan Peninsula and then at Veracruz. And the monkeypox had done an amazing job of wiping out significant chunks of the population long before the folks with the flag depicting blood and gold had ever set foot in Tenochtitlan. Thank you very kindly, Kate. Kate just helped us take the fundraising matching gift of what Randy had put forward at the 1st of December down to $50. Thank you. Thank you very much, Kate. That means that we've got 100 to raise now tonight to get to the evening's fundraising goal. So thank you. I hope some other folks will see Kate and raise her, as the terminology puts it. Now, again, I will note that this is Thorn in the Side Thursday. That means something. That means we look for those things that just make us almost spontaneously, don't! You know, make little weird forest animal noises. And I can't think of a story more evocative of that sense than this one. It comes to us out of Atlanta, Georgia. And it has a little something to do with a future that many of us say that we would like to participate in. A non-hydrocarbon-based, or at least attenuatedly hydrocarbon-based, future. It is the story of Kaveh Kamune, who is a dad in the Atlanta area, down around Chamblee, Georgia. You ever been somewhere that you look down, maybe you got a notification from your mobile device that said, battery down to 10%. You think, well, if I'm going to get it, might want to fire up the charger. And so you do, wherever it is you are. You plug it into the wall, you plug the thing into your, and, you know, you sit there until you get a few more points on your battery. Because one of the big fails of modern supercomputing smart devices is the fact that they are hard on batteries. At one point in time, we had one of the HTC Evos, one of the first really fairly well-developed Android devices, and it seemed like you needed to plug that thing up and charge it every time you made a call or checked your email. It has gotten some better. But that is the future. Plugging in to charge batteries. So there it was. Kaveh Kamuna plugged in at a local elementary school. And that is when the cops showed up. No, really, the cops. He had plugged in his Nissan Leaf all-electric vehicle. These electric vehicles come with extension cables. And his son, Kaveh Kamuna's son, was practicing tennis there, and Dad was there to pick him up after tennis practice. And while waiting, plugged into an external wall socket at Chamblee Middle School. And then he walked over to watch his son practice tennis, proud papa that he is. A little bit later, he looks back over to his car and he sees there's somebody in his car. And he goes over and the somebody in his car is a cop. A cop from the Chamblee PD to protect and to serve. And this is where it just gets bizarre. Kaveh Kamuna looks at the guy and says, "Why are you in my car?" He says, "I'm getting ready to arrest you. Or at least I'm going to charge you for thieving electricity." This is not a joke. The Nissan Leaf charges at about 1 kilowatt per hour. Kaveh Kamuna had been plugged in for less than 20 minutes. Had he remained plugged up for an entire hour, a whole hour, and see, this is one of those things that makes the idea, the concept of an electric vehicle, an all-electric vehicle, rather intriguing. Had he been plugged up for the full hour, the value of the electricity at retail rates would have been somewhere between 8 and 9 pennies. No, really, eight or nine pennies. And so, yes, Irish Dave, Kaveh Kamuna was charged with charging. He used less than 5 cents worth of electricity. Oh, well, thank you, Texas Betsy. I appreciate that, Texas Betsy, pointing out, you know, Bob, schools pay less than retail rates. So, what, maybe 4 cents worth of electricity? 3 pennies worth of electricity? Hey, Penny, hey, Penny. Thank you, Texas Betsy. Thank God. And I'm sure they say this every day down there in Chamblee, Georgia. Thank God for Sergeant Ernesto Ford. Oh, the goddess of irony is with us always. Ford. Sergeant, the police officer's name is Ford. Really? Sergeant Ernesto Ford, 10 days later, went to the home of Kaveh Kamuna and arrested Kaveh Kamuna and charged him with larceny. And alleged that it was larceny because it was done without the consent of the Chamblee Middle School, whom he did not check with in the first place to find out if they minded. But then again, since it's the Chamblee Middle School, would the Chamblee principal have been able to give that consent? Or would it have been the school board? Or would the school board even have been capable of giving that consent? Would it have had to have gone to the entire Georgia State Board of Education? Or would they even have been able to give that consent? Would it have had to have been ruled upon by the Georgia legislature and signed off on by, perennially embattled by, allegations of cronyism and outright corruption, Governor Deal? Hard to know. But Sergeant Ernesto Ford told Atlanta's 11 News, "A theft is a theft, and I'd arrest anybody for charging their car from an outlet without permission," said Sergeant Ford. When contacted for a reaction, his superior, Lieutenant Chevrolet, said no comment. Okay, the Lieutenant Chevrolet part was made up. We all know that his immediate superior is Captain Cadillac. Pity's sakes. But that's Merca. Texas Betsy asking, "Woody, have you arrested someone for charging their fill in the blank? Is there anything on a gun that needs to be charged?" Maybe one's laser sight, but that's probably battery operated. Would he? But no, that's a legitimate question. Would he have charged Kaveh Kamuna's student son had he come over and dad not been there? And he looks down and his cell phone's dead, and he goes, "Oh my goodness, my cell phone's dead. I gotta charge my cell phone up so I can call daddy to come and get me." And into the wall outlet, and, "Son, you're stealing electricity there. I'm gonna have to run you in." What a turd. I mean, in a way, this sort of harkens back to last night's keystonery as described by Mike Rozelle, in which the police were passing around the manual of the Criminal Code of West Virginia, going, "Ah, we got him here." Nope, that's no good. "Now, let me see the damn thing. We'll find something. And litters and deposits and no, that ain't gonna do it either. Next." Kaveh Kamuna spent 15 hours in incarceration. That's probably longer than any he would have had to have potentially faced for stealing less than a nickel. Then again, it is Georgistan, and that may very well be a capital offense. Yeah, see, Jim noting, "Sergeant Ford does not have better things to do." Say what? And thank you, Texas Betsy, 0.5 cents per hour. But then there's this. may we presume that Mr. Kavakamune is in fact a tax-paying citizen of the school district? Wasn't that his electricity in the first place? Just asking. But this is the future. This is what we can expect in the dying world of hydrocar. Because see, Sergeant Ernesto Albert Einstein Ford figured it was just the same as if he had pulled up and somebody was stealing gasoline from the gasoline pump. And the gasoline companies always want people prosecuted for stealing the gasoline. What's next? Charging somebody for stealing sunshine because they've got solar panels on their roof, huh? Well, as a matter of fact, yes, that is what's next. No, really, it is. I'm not kidding. Kind of wish I was. Kinda? No. Oh, I really wish I was. Unfortunately, I'm not. Two pieces here. Something that I had put up on my Facebook page last night, I think it was. And then a sort of companion piece that was sent along by our buddy James in Spain. We'll wait a little bit before I work on the appropriate ditty. I don't know if you noticed it, but a whole bunch of really sleazy stuff from the fine folks, not at all, of the American Legislative Exchange Council, otherwise known as ALEC, done got outed. And it's really interesting because it tells us what their plans are for the coming legislative year. This was published in The Guardian, and it's rather interesting. The coming year we'll see The coming year will see an assault by ALEC and its hydrocarbon toxic buddies on even the idea of solar energy. ALEC will be hustling and pushing and model legislation that will penalize individual homeowners who try to generate their own electricity via the sun. Now, that means something out in the wider world. The state of West Virginia already does all it can to try to discourage anyone from even looking toward the sun or acknowledging its existence. Our existence is predicated on coal, don't you see? This coming week, 800 state legislators and so-called business leaders will be attending a three-day ALEC conference in Washington, D.C., where they will unveil their assault against people who would like to not participate in the further degradation and destruction of the ability of this planet to support human life. I mean, at this point in time, I think it's fair to say that by even opposing, this isn't about solar subsidies. This isn't about solar welfare or tax breaks. This is about people who simply want to put up solar panels on their roofs or on freestanding standards and gather electricity from the sun and use it to power their lives. And thereby reduce by, well, look, we began the program by talking about the impact that one human being can have on the rest of the planet. In the case of the immediate conversation, Nelson Mandela. But one person who goes to solar as opposed to participating in some coal or frack gas-fired bridge, by the way, it has come out in the last few days that any notion that frack gas was ever some sort of a bridge fuel, remember, that's what the Sierra Club said and the Natural Resources Defense Council said when they took millions and millions and millions of dollars from the fracking industry. They said they were doing it because, hydrofractured natural gas, bridge fuel by which we can get off of coal. Well, it turns out the scientists took a look at that whole bridge fuel hooly and found out that I think the phrase was, it's not so much a bridge as a gangplank, that frack gas is every bit as carbon intensive as coal itself, which is pretty nasty. Yeah. So if you don't want to participate in hydrocarbon electricity and you'd prefer to get yours from the sun, Alex's answer is, oh, you'll get yours. They're homicidal. ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, are now openly campaigning to kill you. Me. And a whole bunch of the rest of the planet, if not the entirety of the human species. So, there you have it. The American Legislative Exchange Council has formally endorsed the idea of attacking anyone who dares to put up solar panels. They've even got a term for them now. People who use solar electricity are free riders. Moochers. Free riders. You see, what happens is, if you're still tapped into the grid and you're using solar, basically you have no electricity bill. Because everything that you may use coming in is balanced out by what you're putting back out onto the grid. Free riders. Mutures. Useless eaters. And wait till you hear the lineup of speakers. You know, this is, as Texas Betsy points out, this ALEC is a tax-exempt organization. They are, therefore, a welfare organization. We provide, we collect no taxes from them, even though they're funded by the American Petroleum Institute and the Koch brothers and all those other sleazy subhuman pricks. And it's odd for a tax-exempt organization to be tax-exempt. They have to be nonpartisan. Well, they're having their little clavern in Washington, D.C. Here's the lineup. Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson will publicly embarrass himself again. At least Hillary Clinton won't be there to make him look a fool. He'll have to do it all by himself. And a person described as Republican budget guru and fellow Wisconsinite, Paul Ryan, will also be at the Alec Clavern. I don't know if Paul Ryan is a grand cyclops, an exalted Kleagel, a noble pish posh, or a learned lumpkin, but he's something. I know he's not a guru. By the way, can we get things like guru out of the argot? Because that's really offensive. Gurus, G-U-R-U, or as we say here in Marca, gurus, are holy men in the Sikh faith. Did I have that right? And the Sikh holy book is the final guru. But yes, this story, raw story, refers to Paul Ryan as a guru. But it won't just be Ron Johnson and Paul Ryan, the zombie-eyed granny starver. Thank you, Charlie Pierce. It'll also be U.S. Senator Ted Cruz from Texas Stan, where they just hates them some solar energy, except for, like, Texas Betsy and everybody who lives in her apartment complex. Betsy noting, I'm going to be charged extra for using up sunlight. If Alec gets its way, you will. You'll be lucky if Alec doesn't send a crew there to tear down the solar panels, Betsy. Because that's communist Kenyan anti-colonial socialism, that solar power is. If you were a real patriotic American, you'd be burning oil and coal and frack gas and wood chips and anything you can get to put more carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. Because after all, as one L. Michelle Bachman reminded us, carbon dioxide is natural. It occurs in our soda pop. Thank you. Guru is a Sanskrit term for teacher or master, especially in Indian religions. The Hindu Guru Shishya tradition is the oral tradition or religious doctrine or experiential wisdom transmitted from teacher to student. Yeah, so using that word to describe Paul Ryan is probably not exactly a good fit. Oh, by the way, Mike Pence of Indiana, governor of Talibandiana, is going to be speaking, and so is Matt Mead, governor of Wyoming Stan. Funny, where are the progressives and the liberals in this nonpartisan lineup? I mean, hell, Fighting Bob is nonpartisan. I went up there 2 years ago in Wisconsin, and lo and behold, what did I find there? A Republican addressing the crowd, a guy named Buddy Romer, former governor of Louisiana. The Guardian points out that the essential pieces of the anti-solar strategy of Alec came together at their mini-clavern in Chicago in August. This was the brainchild of the Energy, Environment, and Agriculture subcommittees of ALEC. Irish Dave asking, so since ALEC is trying to kill us, when we stand our ground, will we be in the shadows? The shadow knows, Irish Dave. The shadow knows. But it's only fair to note that when solar panels are outlawed, only outlaws will have solar panels. Wolverines! Right? Darlene noting, hold your breath, sunshine. I guess we're all freeloading when we breathe the air, too, so ALEC will have to be consistent and screw us across the board. Yep, they'll find a way to stealth tax us for every breath we take. I'm sorry, I will not play the police tune. I will not, even though that's a perfect lead-in to the song, Darlene. But you're right. Ultimately, look, Nestle's going after the water. ALEC's going after the solar panel. Hell, the coal industry's going after the air. Right by right of conquest, right? Dr. John pointed out something along on that topic a few moments ago. He said, even the colonial European nations didn't justify their colonies by claiming right of conquest. To do so would have invited other monarchs to conquer them. No, they had to invent the idea of terra nullius, land not claimed by another Christian European power. Think Treaty of Tordesillas. Not just any land could be claimed by Spain or Portugal, only land that another king had not yet claimed. And by king we mean, see above, Christian European. Because it's a safe bet that the people living along the South American Andean coastline pretty well figured that another king already had his hands on the land pretty... Yes, we know them as the Inca. But John continues, of course, they also had to claim the native people weren't civilized, by which they meant they didn't have private property and they didn't improve their land like the Europeans did. John Locke was very helpful in proving. You know, Locke starts out with a decent idea, and then it all goes to hell in a handbasket. Improving the land. Now, what it turned out, with that whole idea of improving the land, what it proved more than anything is that the ignorant white Europeans didn't have any concept of improving the land that didn't mean cutting down everything and putting something else in its place. The entirety of the Americas had been wildly improved over its natural state. The white Europeans just weren't quite sharp enough to figure that out. Witness the raised terraces throughout the Amazon basin. Even when the rivers reach their maximum flood stage, there are living areas that are still raised, and those are not geological appurtenances. Those are the works of human hands. By the way, that whole concept of property ownership, Texas Betsy notes, in the history class I sit in on for 8th grade, the kids wore crowns and walked table to table exclaiming, "Mine!" to show this concept. Was there anybody who wasn't wearing a crown who walked from table to table saying, "Ours!" I didn't think so. But it gets worse, or at least more interesting, to say the very least. Because when I put the ALEC story out last night, our buddy James in Spain uh, Oh, no. Okay. Thank you, Texas Betsy. No one walked from table to table saying ours. The people who were Native Americans in the experiment wandered around confused by all the flags. Jeebus. So anyway, when I put the story out there about, and this is just shocking, the disease is spreading, and it, make no mistake, it is an American disease. When I put the story out there about Alec, James in Spain sent me a story from the local Spain's News in English. Headline, Spain's Solar Police to Kick in Your Door. The latest nail in the coffin for Spain's solar energy producers is an energy law amendment which allows inspectors to enter private properties without a court order. It's a move lawyers believe could set a worrying precedent. As if Spaniards had not already been dissuaded by the potential $60 million fines they face for illegally generating their own solar power, they now have to look forward to a knock on the door from the solar police. A change to the ruling Popular Party's energy law allows inspectors to raid properties they are suspicious of, armed only with administrative authorization. If the suspect denies entry, Spain's industry department will then ask for a court order that guarantees inspectors access to the property alongside Spanish National Police. And Generalissimo Francisco Franco is still dead, or is he? Officers will be able to seize all documents related to energy consumption and seal off entry to the property. Lawyers consulted by Spain's Vox Populi online newspaper raised serious doubts about whether the move was constitutional. They also said it's a worrying precedent by obliging citizens to let inspectors enter a private residence. All this means generating your own solar energy without paying for the privilege is a risky business now in Spain. Oh, for heaven's sake. Whereas Spain once flung money at companies who set up solar power programs in the country, it now plans to slap a fee on people who create their energy for personal consumption. Sounds like a sounds like somebody's been listening in on an Alec conversation. Quoting the Wall Street Journal, Spain is punishing a small but growing segment of the middle class who have installed solar panels to generate their own electricity. Forbes magazine said, you get the feeling that government officials were out of ideas, stared up at the sky one day and thought, I've got it, we'll tax the sun. And of course, there's a reason behind all this. The Popular Party's plan is to raise cash to help pay off their tariff deficit, or the difference between the cost of operating the country's electricity grid and the money it rakes in. The reform aims to raise money for tackling a 26 billion euro debt to power producers, which the state has built up over the years in regulating energy costs and prices. That according to Australia's Business Spectator. And Vox Populi says that the payback comes in the form of this new solar energy law. Nice. Is anybody surprised? These are the death grunts. These are the death grunts of the hydrocarbon fossil fuel industry. This is what it looks and sounds like when an industry sees its own mortality. Shining right before its face. But they'll do this. They'll do everything in their power to continue to make toxic this planet. Because they're not going to be happy if they're not making money by poisoning us. And my inquiry remains the same. Why should we not view an organization like ALEC the same way we would view someone with a gun pointed at us? Because ALEC has a big, big gun made of pure money. And it has the power to wreck the lives of billions. When they say that they don't want no free riders, they're saying that people should not have electricity unless people are paying them. If I was to sit here and make a list of the things that I most dearly yearn for, well, yeah, good barbecue's still going to be at the top of the list, I'm sorry. But no, the things that I seriously yearn for, it is to have an array of solar panels on this property. And if we wanted to get artsy about it, maybe we could put the array of solar panels in the form of a giant middle finger. Powering this little decrepit, falling down, leaks when it rains, busted plumbing, ruined appliances, house. I think I would get up every morning and just run dancing through the yard. Yippee! Yippee! I'm not helping to blow up any goddamn mountains. Yippee! I'm not participating in fracking. Yippee! And it becomes more and more apparent that such an attitude is, what, dangerously revolutionary? That wanting to be free of the polluters and the poisoners and the killers is revolutionary. There will be many fights in the future. What did Nelson Mandela say? Yeah, there it is. I learned that courage was not the absence of fear, but the triumph over it. The brave man is not he who does not feel afraid, but he who conquers that fear. And that other one. For to be free is not merely to cast off one's chains, but to live in a way that respects and enhances the freedom of others. I cannot think of a better way to respect and enhance the freedom of others than to move to, say, solar energy production so that you can say every day that whether it's turning on your TV or your computer or your toaster, you can say, I'm not effing anybody for this. Now, when we get to the bread, that's another discussion. But casting off the chains of hydrocarbon-based energy production, my God, you'd almost feel like gravity had changed on the planet and you were floating a couple of inches off the ground, if not a couple of feet. Wouldn't you? Sandra sent along a piece of music for our consideration. Some good bumper music, she says. I have no doubt. Let's see if it will actually play now that Windows 8.1 for landfills has rearranged my sound playing capacities. That's the end of the filibobster this evening. By no means the end of the program. It's 18 minutes past the hour. We have $50 to go to finish matching Randy's kind gift for the beginning of December, and another $50 after that to come up with what it takes to run this affair from day to day to day. Any help is much appreciated. This is the Horn.
You know from when? From the buses shut the silence start to grumble. From party for a month it take a tumble. From Hungary to Poland to Romania. From the poor the castle them start to crumble. Now when we buck up one another in a reasoning, my friend always end up on the same thing. This is the song I'm love to sing. Kedar, he had to go. Jifka, he had to go. Uza, he had to go. Honeka, he had to go. Kaichesko, he had to go. Just like apartheid, we'll have to go. A while ago, my friend and me was talking. So me said to him, what a way the earth are run nowadays, man. Getting harder by the day, we know where you stand. Cause when we think you're deaf and solid dry land. When you take a stop, you find you in a quick sand. You don't notice how the landscape are shit. It's like volcano one night, and nothing can stop it. Things just a bubble, just a boil down below. Strata separate and repose. And when you think you reach the mountain top, it's a brand new plateau you go buck up. The revolutionary friend shake him head and him sigh. This was him reply. Kedar, he had to go. Jifka, he had to go. Uzak, he had to go. Honika, he had to go. Kaichesko, he had to go. Just like apartheid, we'll have to go. Well, me never did satisfy with what my friend like replied. And to get a deeper meaning in the reasoning, me said to him, well, all right. So God be give the people them glash nuts. And it's for the Stalinists, them plenty problems. So God will live and perish, strike upon them. Confounding bureaucratic stratagem. But we have a case up to the poll facts. Him also opened up Pandora's box. Yes, people power just a show of every hour. And everybody claim them democratic. But some are wolf and some are sheep, and that is problematic. For things like that, you would have called it dialectic. My revolutionary friend paused a while and him smiled. Then him looked me in my eye and replied. Keda, he had to go. Jivko, he had to go. Usa, he had to go. Honika, he had to go. Kaichesku, he had to go. So take apartheid, we'll have to go. Well, me couldn't elaborate. Plus, it was getting kinda late. So in spite of my lack of understanding about the meaning of the changes in the East for the West, nonetheless. And although me have me reservations about the consequences and implications, especially the black liberation, to bring the reasoning to a conclusion, I had was to agree with my friend, hoping that when we meet up once again, we could have a more fuller conversation. So me said to him, you know what? Him say what? Me say, Kedar, he had to go. Jitka, he had to go. Husak, he had to go. Onika, he had to go. Kaichesku, he had to go. Just like apartheid, soon gone. My revolutionary friend is not the same again. You know from when?
Linton Kwesi Johnson, my revolutionary friend. Thanks, Sandra, for sending that along. That was, chair dancing. Another reason we don't have video on this program. It's not a pretty thing when I chair dance. I mean, fully clothed and everything, but it's just, I look pretty silly doing it. So, a couple of things out there to sort of not move away from, but highlight some other stories. Irish Dave asking, question of the day. In Spain, do freedom fighters shout, Los Glotones? I'm guessing that's Wolverines. Guessing only. I'm so not over that story about Alec. The nerve. See, at this point in time, they don't view themselves as participants in a democratic process or even something remotely resembling democracy, because we've never had democracy in this country. It's always been aspirational and not operational. They believe that they can just pull people together and issue their demands, you know, like hostage takers, like thugs. As Asa pointed out from Vancouver, I always say to friends and family, the Taliban rule this part of the world too, only over here they wear suits. I don't think there's a hell of a lot of difference between, maybe there's a religious difference, but that's superficial. Authoritarians are authoritarians are authoritarians, with all apologies to Gertrude Stein. The A in Alex should stand for authoritarian, the authoritarian legislative exchange coup. Let's get rid of council, too. You get the idea. But they've moved out into the open. They are now completely comfortable with us knowing that they're out to kill us. But there are other stories this evening. The story broke, and Isaac alerted me to it yesterday. And there was just so much. We got so engaged in the conversation with Mike Rozelle and the phone conversation that followed, that there was not enough time to go into it. Isaac let me know that Martin Bashir over at MSNBC had resigned. And you know that this all stems from a flap that he caused when, well, no, that Sarah Palin caused, really. Godzilla from Wasilla. You may recall a few weeks ago, Sarah Palin said that Obamacare was just like slavery. Martin Bashir did a little bit of historical research and went back to something that is always helpful, in other words, primary source documents, the value of which Dr. Bill taught me. Never mind what somebody says that somebody said about something that somebody said. Go find the person who said it and see how it worked from there. And so Martin Bashir went to the diary of an overseer in the employ of a Jamaican slave owner. And that diary contained a reference to some of the brutal things that this slave owner had done to the human beings that he claimed to own. One of which included compelling one slave to defecate into the mouth of another slave. And in pointing out the manifest idiocy of Godzilla from Wasilla, Martin Bashir said something to the effect, and I'm sure I'm getting this wrong, that if anyone was deserving of that treatment, she is. The right wing erupted in a frenzy. Martin Bashir wants to poopy in Sarah Palin's malthus! Which, of course, was not what was said at all. It was a suppositional statement. The statement began with, if. He did not say when. He did not say, let's all poop on Sarah Palin. He said, if. But the right wing apparently hear only what they wish to hear. And what they heard was that Martin Bashir, and you know, he's not real white or anything, wanted to poop in Sarah Palin's mouth eater. And the frenzy, well, Martin Bashir got acorned. And look, I don't watch television anymore. That's another thing that's gone by the wayside here at the mansion. But even when we had it, I was not prone to watching Martin Bashir. Or much of anything on MSNBC. Just not. Nor CNN, nor God knows Radio Rwanda. You know, breaking news, sure. But anyway. So I'm not coming at this as somebody who says, oh my God. No. But I do come to this pissed off to no end that the right wing has nailed up another pelt on its mantle of another person who said something they didn't agree with and is now run off because, yeah, Martin Bashir resigned. No, no. It was after a meeting with MSNBC headman Phil Griffin, and, you know, well, Martin, if that's what you insist on doing, that's what I guess you're going to have to do because we'd fire you otherwise. But they get their way. Do you remember the memo that went out back when poor old Air America was trying to get started? There was literally a conspiracy formed to make sure that no advertising was ever bought on an Air America program or on a station that was carrying Air America. You can look it up. It's there. It's real. And then there's Acorn. And that whole miserable bit of business. And there's the stuff that was done, that's been done repeatedly to our dear friend Malloy. Because you see, the right wing cannot tolerate a level playing field. They cannot take as good as they give. Remember when Bill O'Reilly was shocked when he went into that restaurant in Harlem and was not greeted by some sort of Zulu war dance? He was shocked. I mean, they were using silverware and everything. Yeah, it was shocking, Andy, it was. Bill O'Reilly is still broadcasting. Remember when Rush Limbaugh told person of color who called his program to call him back when he had removed the bone from his nose? Remember when Rush Limbaugh asked why it was that all the wanted posters look like Jesse Jackson, or was it Al Sharpton? I can't remember. Remember? Yeah, he's still broadcasting, too. Even the Sandra Fluck controversy, in which he called an innocent human female a slut. Yeah, he's still on the air, too. I-O-K-I-Y-A-R is an operative phrase, but it doesn't really fully encompass the reality. Jeremy pointing out by email, Martin Bashir resigned about as much as Olbermann did from MSNBC. They just don't have the goddamn balls to tell their viewership the truth. Because their viewership would move on. Jim notes that Martin Bashir was the only rational voice left on MSNBC, and now he's gone. What a loss. Dr. John, Palin and slavery. This lady needs the Clockwork Orange treatment with 12 years a slave, and then let's see what she has to say. Man. Oh, by the way, as an addendum, yeah, I'd forgotten about that. Irish Dave noted, Limbaugh called Sandra Fluck a slut. And then Big Eddie used a similar or the same word. He got suspended from the airwaves. They never laid a finger on Flush Flimball because, my friends, I'm an entertainer. Bullshit. And so now, there's Godzilla from Wasilla flapping her yap. With some sort of indirect crowing. You might want to get your anti-emetics out before this rolls. This is pretty disgusting. I mean, you can imagine her at home.
Todd, they made that brown man resign for wanting to poop in my mouth. It's okay if you do, though, Todd, because we have a Christian marriage.
Time we turn to former governor of the great state, the great big state of Alaska, Governor Sarah Palin. Morning.
Thanks for letting me be here.
After.
You guys. You know, today with the news of Martin Bashir resigning, post an apology, sort of a 3-week missing time from television. And we want to talk about
this, by the way, is the blithering idiot Hasselbeck.
You say something that I think is applicable to Martin Bashir. You said, if you live and love this world, you will be hurt.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously, his comments were hurtful and wrong.
You idiot! They were neither wrong nor hurtful. What was hurtful and wrong was saying that people who have no health care being able to have health care was the same as putting chains on them, carrying them across the Atlantic Ocean side by side in the hold of a goddamn ship, and selling them to the highest bidder when they got to North America. Oh, you stupid twits! That's as much of that clip as I can stand.
If you love this world, you're going to be hurt.
Irish Dave anticipating me. I heard that that Palin was so sweet that she wouldn't say shit if she had a mouthful of it. No, wait, not... And we have a kind anonymous contribution that has finished off, along with our buddy Sal, Randy's kind contribution from the beginning of December. Thank you one and all. That leaves us only $50 to go this evening to reach tonight's fundraising goal so that we can sort of get out of a hole. We're only in a short one, but it's there. Thank you, one and all.
Obamacare is the same as slavery. You mark my words.
She said mark my words, too, along the way, I think. And it raises the larger question of what would it actually take to teach this moron, this woman with barely two brain cells to rub together, what would it take to teach her just how evil slavery was? Would walking the row on row of crosses at places like Gettysburg or Shiloh do it? I doubt it. She's a Confederate sympathizer. Would it do any good for her to actually read the journals that Martin Bashir referenced? I doubt it. All she heard was Martin, the brown man, wants to poop in my mouth. Ew!
Brother.
Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Why me all the time?
I don't know.
I hit
the first button.
Well, there's so many things. Mandela, I remember the whole thing pretty well with it from start to finish, and I never thought he would be successful. Because the truth of the matter is, who lost the Boer War?
The Boers?
Yep. Who ran South Africa?
The Boers, the Dutch.
Yeah, how come?
Because they got there first? I don't know. I'm kind of thin on that, Bill.
They lose this war to the English, and the English let them slide back and take over again.
Yeah.
Does that make any sense to you?
Not really. I don't know.
What the hell were the British doing? You won the damn war. How come you let these guys slide back into control again? Don't make any sense to me. I guess I don't know anything.
But they did. The South African government did admit that the Jim Crow segregated South was their model for apartheid.
Yeah, well, I can believe that.
They just tweaked it and made it a lot meaner and a lot nastier. And you can look at, in a way, Bill, you can look at South Africa in its apartheid days and say to yourself, well, this is exactly what the Confederacy would have looked like had they successfully seceded from the Union.
Yeah, I guess you're right. My whole attitude changed so vividly after listening to or reading the Fletcher Pratt's thing, the ordeal by fire, as he called it originally, and my attitude changed because I had been conditioned to just the idea that the Lee and all those brave generals and the knightly, they were big. They bought big into Ivanhoe and that kind of stuff down there. And I read it and I thought, well, but that's what they wanted. Why? Because, they started that second rebellion thing. That was going hot and heavy, Bob. This was their second American Revolution.
Oh, that's the way they build it, yes.
Yeah. And they pushed it that way. But as I look back and I say, how come the British kicked the Dutch, took power, theoretically, and then let them have it back? What the hell was that about? I mean, the idea of somebody totally dominating somebody else in every way, shape, or form, Bob, I hate to say.
Oh, do you think the British would have been any better? I mean, don't we have Rhodesia to look at in that regard?
Yeah, but man, I don't think anything compared as badly as, and for so long, because you look at the other British colonies were pulling out left and right.
For instance, you get Mohandas K. Gandhi,
yeah,
who gets a taste of apartheid in South Africa, and then heads back to India. Well, life was not much better for natives of the subcontinent under the rule of the British than it was for persons of color under South African rule. I mean, there was a whole lot of same in that, because at its essence, racism knows no national boundaries. For God's sakes, look what King Leopold, did to the Belgian Congo.
Yeah.
Innocent
Belgians of World War One who were being just tortured by the Germans.
Right. Except before that, we throw Hitler's name around pretty loosely for his very real hand in the slaughter of millions. But my God, millions died in the Belgian Congo under Leopold.
Yeah.
And Leopold was not, you know, he justified it. And he lived to a ripe old age.
Yeah.
And nobody ever called him to account.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was just, this thing was, well, you have to take, what year did Mandela finally start to make an impact?
Well, God, what was he? He was jailed in what, 1962?
Yeah, it was around that time when the name began to be seen.
African National Congress. And,
yeah, yeah.
And let's be at least let's have some candor, Bill, about certain realities. I happened to be listening to National Petroleum Radio while I was waiting for Ferg to get out of testing a couple of days ago, and I heard Terry Gross interviewing some guy who had written a new book about gold.
Oh.
And there was a story about gold mining in South Africa.
Okay, yeah.
And it's horrifying. Absolutely terrifying.
And who's running the mines? The government or?
Well, no, it's private industry with government connivance. But the larger part of that story was that about 20% of the gold that comes out of those mines is stolen by organized crime.
Oh.
Because they sneak people into the mines who then work in part, I mean, these tunnels go for hundreds of miles.
Yeah.
And they're more than 2 miles beneath the earth. I mean, it's so far beneath the earth, Bill, that instead of being cold in the mine, it's actually hot. It's like a sauna.
Ooh.
The guy says. So that was part of the story, but I couldn't forget the image because it was captured and sent around the world. I remember Sandra and I discussing it one evening on the program of modern South African government sanctioned wholesale murder of gold mine workers simply striking for something approaching a fair wage.
Jeez.
And so it should be remembered, and in a way, while we mark the passing of Nelson Mandela, I am also reminded of what Dr. John has tried to teach me about the great man theory of history. That great individuals somehow move the course of history, as opposed to the massive amount of unknown and unnamed who actually get it done behind a quote-unquote leader. You know, Nelson Mandela would never have seen the light of day were it not for the fact that his name was kept in constant presence by people unknown and unnamed to this day, many of whom are now dead.
Yeah.
You know, no, Amnesty International did not get Nelson Mandela freed. People working on the ground day in, day out, never forgetting the mission, got Nelson Mandela freed. He was the avatar of the hopes and dreams of freedom of a completely oppressed people. But if we think that he did all the heavy lifting, we do a profound disservice to everybody else who was hauling on that rope too. Does this make any sense? I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, that's what I thought that there were several ex-colonies of England that broke loose earlier than South Africa. South Africa had been, I mean, this the way the Boers ran it, the way the Dutch ran it, as you say, it was a modeled on the segregated South. And believe me, we had ethnic segregation up north. It was neighborhood segregation. Because I happened to live, you know, in that type of neighborhood. And frankly, I was talking to a guy that they're putting together the next class for the Blues Society Hall of Fame. And because I'm the only guy that's in it that's still alive. And that's only half-assed sometimes. But yeah, the whole thing, there was other countries. Didn't Rhodesia break? No, what? Not Rhodesia, but other nations basically broke out of the empire and set up independent states.
Well, there's a lot of that goes on in the aftermath of the Second World War.
Yeah,
the Mau Mau uprising.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of, the Mau Mau.
That's Kenya.
Yep.
You've got and of course Zimbabwe only becomes Zimbabwe and not Rhodesia. What, in the 70s, the 80s?
True. They were.
But. In the aftermath of the Second World War, Britain could no longer hold on to its imperial power. And for good damn reason.
Yeah.
You cannot sit there and fight a war and say we're fighting against the forces of tyranny, win the war, and then go back to being a tyrant yourself.
And from what I've read, several black African nations put men into uniform and fought against the Japanese in India and gave a good account of themselves.
Sure, and look at the Gurkhas and the Sepoys.
Oh, yeah, you don't want to. One of the best units we had in the Philippines in the beginning of the war were the Philippine Scouts, who were, you know, Filipinos. And a lot of the volunteers. I just read the thing about when they got into the prison camp and rescued the last few hundred American POWs. Hell, the guys that held the bridges to keep the Japanese from intervening in it were Filipinos themselves, and they gave a great account of themselves. And they weren't former scouts either. They were Filipinos who had been taken into the so-called Philippine Army before World War II, which was a paper army, you know. But by this time, they knew their business, and they... Without their support, and frankly, those guys went out and got carts and bullocks, you know, the hell do they call them? The carabao. And that's how they moved those POWs, in the backs of, you know, backs of these carts, accompanied by these American Rangers that had gone in and knocked out the Japanese at the camp. But without the support of the Filipinos keeping out Japanese reinforcements, they wouldn't have been able to pull that one off. But anyway, I thought that there was some movement in Africa before South Africa somehow held out, like, tenaciously against him and his, you know, the African, was the African Congress, was that what they called it?
African National Congress.
National Congress, ANC, yeah. So they fought hard against them. And they were still part of the British Empire. You think the home folks would have told them point blank, knock it off. You know, stop it. Because it's making us look like bad, and it is bad. Let's face it. It's what they were doing was... You couldn't get more rotten than that, than what they tried to do to the ANC. It's just... I mean, I miss so much of that. It's, well, you ask an American about the Algerian Revolution.
See, yeah, there's another one.
Yeah.
Nobody, virtually no one in Europe gets off with clean hands from results of colonialism.
Yeah.
You know, the Spanish and the Portuguese get off to a running start, followed shortly by the English and the Dutch, and the next thing you know, a genocide whose full scope has yet to be accurately counted has transpired in the Western Hemisphere.
Yes, sir.
I mean, that's a fact.
We went into it late, but where we got into it.
But the Belgians have to get into it. The Germans tried to get into it. The French went hog wild. The Italians with Libya and Ethiopia.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, people forget that I have to inform some people that Libya one time, what was it called, Cyrenaica or Cyrenaica?
Yeah, Cyrenaica.
Yeah, I could never pronounce it. You know, I never heard any teacher pronounce it because unless you went...
Just remember, if it's Latin, if that's a C, it's a K.
Okay. Well, you know, I don't...
S in Latin, in the Latin alphabet, S's are S's and C's are K's.
Well, I flunked Latin a couple times, Bob. I wasn't... That was a real big class in Catholic high school, you know.
Oh, I can imagine, yes.
Because if you couldn't become a lawyer, you could always become a priest, you know, if you spoke enough of the stuff.
Yeah. And they always pitched it to people who wanted to go to medical school, too.
Yeah. Well, the one thing I really learned in Catholic schools was how to sell raffle tickets. I, you know, got pretty good at that. And me and some of my friends used to get those things and never sign for them. So we were really good at it because we made much more money selling. Small time con guy. Well, it goes into music, that kind of figures, doesn't it? And Ferg, that's how I got my high school degree. And that test, man, I finished in the upper 10% in reading and comprehension. What gave him trouble? Math?
Oh, yeah. His lowest scores were math and writing.
Writing? What's that? They still do that?
Right, that may be the problem.
Yeah. Well,
if they'd asked him to do it with his thumbs on a telephone keypad, you know, he probably would have been in the 99th percentile.
Yeah. Well, I have to get on. Not bad choice of words. I have to get just a few reflections on Sarah Palin.
Please.
First of all, there must have been something wrong with me. I couldn't see her being attractive for anything. I just couldn't see it.
When you know how hateful she is, there's no way that she can be pretty.
And what's his name's remark about her, that when he accused her, she should do this. Well, she could never really swallow too much of what was already coming out of her own mouth. She didn't, you know, but mostly what came out of her mouth was crap already. So how can you stuff more in when all of it's already coming out? That's my, because I could never buy her. I just didn't understand what people saw in her. This woman, you talk about dumber than a box of rocks. I should have run for office after I saw that. I said, man, she's dumber. But you're right. These guys are out coming out of the woodwork. The things they're trying to push through, the different state offices are just, you know, sometimes I feel bad about being old. I don't like it much. But on the other hand, if this is what I got to look forward to, I'll leave. Thank you. Because we thought those of us who pushed Barry Goldwater off the map in 1964, we thought we had killed these guys. We thought we had destroyed them.
See, that's the problem, Bill. We constantly get flush with that sense. I've never heard anybody say that, you know, we thought we finally had the job done in 1964. But no one would be, well, you wouldn't be wrong for thinking that because it sure looked like it, didn't it?
Yep.
And four years later, we get Nixon. And so, what, 6 years later, people are jumping up and down and crowing, we got him this time, we got him this time, with Watergate.
Yeah.
And 6 years later, we get Reagan.
Yeah.
And then we get 12 miserable years of Reagan and Bush.
Oh,
and the only hope of replacing him is the best Republican president we'd had since Eisenhower, Clinton.
Yeah, that's true about him. He's phony as hell, too. He was bought and paid for, too.
And then the entire nation looked at each other and said, no, really? Really? That dumbass? W. Bush? Really? No. No way. No way this country.
And to be fair,
Bill, this country didn't elect him.
No.
He was installed by the Supreme Court.
Yep.
But then after 4 years, well, okay. And then in November 2004, I forget which British paper it was that wrote the headline, how can 53 million Americans be so stupid?
Well, I think the second one was rigged here in Ohio.
Oh, stay out of small aircraft.
Yeah. Yeah, very true. It's just, it's hard for me to believe what I'm seeing after reading so much of the... That's where Dr. Bill has been straightening me out constantly on... Because my weakness was the Constitution. I didn't, ever study it. To me, the country didn't start until the 1860s, when it faced its biggest test. And only how many 6 million people died?
That is the seductive lure of the history of war, Bill.
Yeah.
Because this is not a criticism by any stretch of the imagination, but this country started facing significant challenges from jump.
Yep.
I mean, the fact that they couldn't get a constitution approved unless it referred to persons of color as 3/5 of a human being.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, when I saw that in grade school history, I thought, well, look, we've got over that. We've got past that. Because remember, Bob, I was kind of a minority in the general area that I was living in. The projects themselves were, I'd say, probably 90% Caucasian, but the surrounding area was not. And so you went to school where you were the only guy that looked like you in the class, like I did in the first and second grade. So as time went on, you thought you had gotten past this stuff. And, of course, then Dr. King came along and, the most ridiculous thing in the world, you sit in the bus. Bob, I'd get on a bus to go downtown, and I didn't care who I sat next to. I just, if they had the card game going in the back, I stayed away from them. I might start gambling and lose everything. like every other sucker on that.
All you got to do is find the queen. See the queen? There's the queen. Find the queen. All you got to do is find the queen.
And, hell, when my Korean War buddy, who was a vet, he'd take me to the bar with him, and he'd drink fish bowls while I drank Coke and pumped money into the jukebox to hear music that had my mouth hanging open. And then there was a guy came in with a big white hollow body guitar and sat down to play, and then your eyes were popping out for sure. Except the guy, in retrospect, the guy was pretty damn bad. But what the hell did I know at 13?
Yeah, at 13, he sounded, what did you know from bad?
Good. Well, that was the strangest thing, and I'll let you go after this, but to go into a saloon down near Old League Park where the Indians played ball in the 20s and 30s, and the bar owner was a old white guy who looked like he belonged from a Tennessee Williams movie. Both legs were cut, and he was in a wheelchair. And knowing what I know about medicine, I might have said diabetes,
Yeah.
For all I know, it could have been a railroad car, or whatever. But the guy who was on duty as a private patrolman had a shotgun and a bandolier of ammunition. He looked like one of Pancho Villa's guys. And everybody else was a darker hue than me, and yet they never threw us out the door. And a lot of guys were pleased to talk to you and ask you, well, how did you find out about this? How did you take to this stuff? So it was kind of an honor. And it was kind of a break in a lot. But again, that's, a lot of blues, white blues players, they didn't come from where I started in the time. And they just listened to records and learned, which we all do to a degree. But,
But when you see it live,
yeah,
in a really, especially if it's something really, really small, because I mean I had that sort of little blues epiphany once upon a time up in Morgantown of all places, Morgantown, West Virginia, when I was a student up there. Some buddies of mine and I went into this just little hole in the wall you know, long neck bottles of beer and folding chairs on a concrete floor.
Yep.
And there was an old guy with an acoustic guitar and a harp.
Yep. Playing in a rack.
Yeah.
On his neck.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'd never heard such come out of a guitar. Or for that matter, out of a human being. And, you know, I think it was maybe $3 to get in. And maybe there were 25 people there on a campus of 20,000. And meanwhile, there was a line around the block to get into the disco meat market.
Oh, of course.
But I just sat there. I sat there with my mouth hanging open, catching flies.
Well, I got lucky with another bar.
Because, I mean, I swore that smoke was going to come off the neck of that guitar just any minute.
Yes, these cats could play. I mean, they were not.
And I think the guy was 1,000 years old.
Well, they weren't in the class of Albert or B.B. King or Little Milton or so many of the other great younger guitar players.
No, this was a journeyman. I mean, he played steady, but no, he wasn't sitting down with a gold-plated Gretsch hollow body. I mean, he was playing what was probably an original Gibson Hummingbird.
Oh my!
And I mean, it had all the battering and beating and weathering and wear. You know, this was a player's instrument.
This is his love affair.
Yeah. And from there on, I listened to, I'd been listening along, but, you know, I really started listening after that. And I wanted to suggest something, when you get a chance, because this is an old buddy of mine, and he's a real joy to listen to. He's been playing for a long time, and I've played a little bit of him along the way here on the program, but if you can access YouTube, go and check out a guy named Roger Wilson. Roger Wilson, just like it sounds. He's out of Atlanta. He's a bluesman. He's got a real beautiful, rich baritone, and can play the strings right off the neck of a guitar. And the connection there is that I first knew Roger, and would go out to see him playing in bars. Because one night a week he was my producer on the overnight shift at CNN Radio. And, you know, it's kind of cool when a guy who sounds like Elvis tells you, five minutes, please, 5 minutes to top, you know, on the newsroom intercom.
Well, the other thing I had, Bob, was there was a club that started bringing up New Orleans jazz players, trumpet players, clarinet players. And I met a bass player who was named Papa John Joseph, and he had played bass for a guy in the 1890s, early 1900s, named Buddy Bolden. B-U-D-D-Y space B-O-L-D-E-N. And people should check that name on the internet, because Buddy was credited with being one of the earliest of the New Orleans jazz clarinetists. And I was 18 years old, and this guy was like, you know, 70-some. And he kept calling me sir, and it was embarrassing. I said, no, you're sir. Because I just couldn't buy it. I mean, that's not the way I had been raised. Older people, I don't care, black, white, red, Asian, from Mars. If they're that much older than me, they're sir in my house. You better watch your old lady would crack you one if you didn't, you know, behave yourself and treat people like, you know, with the respect they deserved. I guess that's why things happen the way they do, Bob. It's still what you're taught at home makes a big difference. I saw a friend of mine one time mistakenly asked two young black guys in an old black bar, how are you boys doing tonight?
Ah!
And man, I was ducking. I had to get the hell out of the way. And he was a Heights suburbanite, and I had to explain to him, look, how are you fellas doing? How are you men doing? How do you guys feel? I had to explain to him. He had no concept that what he said was an open insult to these young men.
Yeah, Texas.
I know he didn't mean to insult anybody. He was being friendly, he thought.
Right, right. And, yeah, some hillbilly might. How you fellas doing tonight?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Texas Betsy just added a little note to what you're talking about. She said the phenomenon Bill is discussing was part of the discussion in my class today about why someone in a store might call them sir, but never boy.
Yeah. You just don't do that to people. I mean, because I didn't mean any. If I said it, I wouldn't mean anything by it either. But once you learn, you don't say things. It's just this is an example of how up shit creek those people that acted like that were. To tell a grown man, oh, well, if they got old enough, and I know a couple of my friends that are listening, they became uncle if they were old enough, an auntie.
Yeah, oh,
that
sure.
That was a form of actual grudging.
Grudging respect for having survived.
Yeah. Now, I'll let you go, but Mandela was more of a man than I'll ever be, that's for damn sure, and was it perfect? No. Perfect is what just getting some voice for people was perfect.
Well, you just you just got a little fan mail. Jude just dropped a note and said, "Please let Bill know what a decent human being he is. It's an honor to be able to listen to his thoughts."
Well, I could be a nasty kid. I mean, you heard my comments about Sarah. I'm not too nice to her. I saw some clips of her playing basketball. I said, man, she's clumsy. She was not anywhere near some of the stuff I've seen in the playground.
Never heard her playing the flute, did you?
No.
Yeah, good for you.
That bad, huh?
She could make a freight train take a dirt road.
Well, that's good. I'll let you go with that one.
All right, Bill, you take care.
Take care now.
Bye now. Our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, calling from Cleveland. Going right back to the phones in a minute, but a couple of emails to go into. New listener, Phil writes in, says, "Bob, you're a refreshing voice. Glad I found your show. I heard you kind of diss MSNBC. I do not see how you could not enjoy the Maddow show. She does more research than anyone and always picks the right things to talk about. I will try to keep listening, but if you discourage people from watching the only network from left of center, shame on you. Thanks, I think." Signed, Phil. I'm not trying to discourage anybody from watching MSNBC. I don't encourage or discourage anybody from watching anything. Watch Duck Dynasty for all I care. But, you know, I don't watch it because there's no longer TV in this house. I mean, you know, we watch Netflix and Amazon Prime and stuff like that. But there's no cable. There's no broadcast TV around here. It just isn't. That having been said, There's room to criticize MSNBC, and I disagree. MSNBC is not left or center. MSNBC is center. There's nobody on MSNBC, and Phil, maybe if you spend a little bit more time with the Horn Family Commune, you'll hear phrases like left. What left? There's no left in this country. You know, wanting people to have access to single payer health care is not the same thing as hollering, "Workers of the world, unite, you have nothing to lose but your chains." There's no left in this country. Anything that is defined by the right as the left, you can guess, is never anything more than centrist. And if MSNBC is a left-leaning network, please, for the love of Christ, explain the Joe Scarborough unindicted co-conspirator to me. For that matter, explain Mika Brzezinski. But mostly I don't have time to watch it because, well, I'm doing this. Even when we had cable, I'm doing this. And I'm working through the course of the day, reading. So it's very seldom that I've tuned in anything on that channel and seen a story I haven't already read. Because these are commentary programs, just like this program is a commentary program. And frankly, secondarily, I don't much care for TV because it is, and I'm not being elitist here, I love to listen. But unless I'm watching a movie or a football game or something, watching somebody sit in front of a camera and talk at me doesn't do much for me. And that's the best I can explain. So, shame on me. I'm sorry. And I hope you will keep listening. I hope this program has meaning. I hope the comments conversation has meaning. And Phil, you're welcome to join the conversation. That's the whole purpose of this. There are six lines here and 3 hours a night, and pretty much everybody gets a shot anytime they want to pick up the phone and dial. And it also works on Skype. So there's that. So I'm sorry. I like Rachel Maddow. I think she's brilliant. But there's just not a lot. No, let's put it this way. I'm not going to get a cable bill for that. Thanks, Texas Betsy. Give the phone number, please. 304-658-3333. And frankly, by the time the Maddow rerun rolls around, I'm either in bed or 9 times out of 10, listening to Malloy and Rick Smith. Now that's fun, listening to two brilliant progressive talkers through two different sets of speakers. That'll get your brain cooking. Jack in Shreveport says, "I almost spewed beer. That freight train thing cracked me up." And Jack also noting the left. For example, O'Reilly uses the term the ultra far left on a regular basis. "What the crap is that?" says Jack. Irish Dave pointing out, but Bob, Meek has some fine legs. Yes, they display them frequently. And then Irish Dave says, "Killer Joe was acting alone, I think. Single intern theory and such as that." Yeah. And that's the whole thing. Anything to the left of Adolf Hitler, thank you, Cosmic Michael, in the chat room, anything to the left of Adolf Hitler is the ultra-far left, according to the right wing in this country. Good God, they had to put together a seminar to try to preemptively teach Republican candidates for 2014 not to say things like non-consensual, what was the rape phrase? Good God, I think I put it on a brain cell that I had to take out and kill just because it was so damned odious. And hey, Notagoshi in the chat room. Good evening. So I hope that clears that up. You know, I'm not anti-MSNBC. I'm sorry that Martin Bashir is gone. He was good as far as I could tell. And frankly, if the benchmark standard now for whether one can be on the for-profit media is whether or not one will bow and scrape and do obeisance to Sarah effing Palin, well, you know what? MSNBC would have a hell of a lot more of my respect if Phil Griffin would have looked at Martin Bashir and said, "Like hell you're resigning. We'll go to the wall with you." But you don't get a hell of a lot of that in the for-profit media. And do please remember who now owns MSNBC. Hint, it is not the Communist Party of America. Back to the phones, and after the phones, then to Skype. Hey, welcome to the program.
What's up, Bob?
What's happening, Jim?
Oh, not much. I just turned you on a little bit. Joe Scarborough, yeah. But he had that mysterious.
Yes, her name was Lori Klosutis. Let us not forget her name.
Yeah, good thing it wasn't you and me. We probably had a little bit more trouble than he did since he was a congressman. That might have had a little.
Yeah, I might have had a little bit to do with it, Jim. I doubt if it was you or me that they would bring in a disgraced, de-smocked, de-frocked medical examiner from Missouri to do the post-mortem.
Gee, you think? I don't know. It sounds kind of conspiratorial.
Well, imagine that. Me, you.
Yeah. Yeah. Or here in this country. No, never. But, Anna Brzezinski, what's her name? The blonde. She does have some hot legs, and she's hot. But
oh, Mika Brzezinski?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're being a little sexist here, and I want to be careful of that, but.
Okay. No, but I mean, other than that, I watch it sometimes.
Well, no, I mean, they openly display her legs.
Oh,
I mean, just like Fox News does with Elizabeth Hasselbeck, Megyn Kelly, and the rest of the attack blondes.
Exactly. That's what I was going to point out. They do that on that channel, too. But, so they're getting rid of the, what's his name? Because I catch it sometimes. I watch it a little bit, MSNBC. Because once in a while, they'll have a good story or a good report. But for the most part, it's just, it's like already old news, you know? And it's so watered down to me. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't really depend on it for news. I'm like, I mean, it's left-leaning as far as Fox and MSNBC. I mean, yeah, and the other. I mean, I don't even watch corporate news much. It's just a waste of time.
See, this light went on for me, Jim, when I realized that the purpose of any commercial broadcast is not to deliver programming to you, but to deliver you to advertisers.
Exactly, to make money for the. Make money for the company with the way they make money is sell product or offer product. Yeah, that's it. And that's the other thing I've kind of noticed. The whole country is like this. Everything is product over human beings. You know, and even as a worker, I mean, even as a human being, you're not a human being. You're a consumer. I mean, it's subtle messaging, but it's in there. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they just like the sale. What was it? Day after Thanksgiving, and now they're moving it up a day. And I was talking, believe it or not, I'm talking with. I heard my sister say over Thanksgiving, she's talking with. Well, those people, they need to work. They probably don't mind working on Thanksgiving. You know, I didn't say anything. What's the point getting up?
Well, I can tell you at least one person who minded working on Thanksgiving, but you know, then again, what are you going to do?
Yeah, you know, and I'm stuck in one of those jobs that they
and you know what? To be fair, Jim, if Walmart was paying triple time for working Thanksgiving, they probably would have to turn people away.
Oh yeah.
You know, make it worth their while. Don't let it. Don't you know? At least have a little bit of respect.
Yeah. Well, it goes back to the Calvinistic thing: the chosen and the unchosen. You know.
Right. You'll be successful if God loves you.
Yeah. Or if you contribute enough too. Because funny that all-powerful being needs those contributions to keep going.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting?
Funny how that works out. But. Yeah, so that's just, I don't know, the way this country's been going, ever since I've been, it seems like growing up, and it just seems to be getting worse and worse and worse. And I don't see, you know, unless it's like some sort of awakening, vast awakening, which I doubt, I don't see how that could happen. I mean, even when some of the Republican candidates for president, they shouldn't get more than 20 or 30% if people had a half a clue of what the Republicans are really about. But I mean, especially down here.
Well, I mean, look at the speech that President Not Sure gave in the last day or so. the income inequality speech. Charlie Pierce pointed out over at the Esquire blog that you can tell how important it is by the studious degree to which it was roundly ignored by the for-profit media. And it was.
Really? Like I said, I don't watch it, so.
Yeah, well, all the reportage that I read, no big deal. I mean, he's just talking about those useless eaters some more. Communists, you know, because he's already, because the right wing already knows, and the for-profit media are owned by the right wing, so they know that's just commie talking. That's anti-colonialist Kenyan socialist Muslim talking kind of stuff. I mean, that's the way those anti-colonialist Kenyan Muslims talk. Income inequality.
And you try and talk to somebody, who's got it kind of good, you know, they're not millionaires, but they're doing all right. But they just buy right into it. They don't see that they could be next. You know, I guess it's like the old Nazi quote, or the quote about the Nazis. First they came for the gypsies, I wasn't a gypsy, Jews, I wasn't a Jew. But then they came for me and there was nobody to help, you know? So, I don't know. But I don't know. I'm at a loss.
Yeah.
Good hearing your show. I'm off tonight, but I'll be back at the Salt Mine tomorrow. But are you going to be on next week?
Yeah. I mean, the default is that I'm here Monday through Friday. I mean, we don't have the GED every Monday and Tuesday.
Okay. Yeah. Well, because I didn't catch you. I'll have to go back and look in the archives and catch you. Because I have to keep up because you are very enlightening and entertaining simultaneously, which is a rarity. So you have a good night.
All right. Thanks, Jim. Thanks so much. You have a good night, man. Bye now. Our buddy Jim calling from the wilds of Louisiana, Stan. Greg with an email. The far left. Hey, Bob, good example of the far left would have been the 2008 presidential election. Does anybody think that Obama wasn't going to cave into the right? Please remember who wasn't given a rat's ass of a voice during the Democratic debates. Dennis Kucinich. As far as a cable bill, I dropped mine in September of 2006. Why pay for something that keeps you politically oppressed? And along those lines, a note also coming in via Twitter from our buddy Fritz in Arkansas. Fritz says, congrats on being a cord cutter household. Nice to not pay cable fees to Comcast, NBC, Time Warner, News Corp, etc. And to be honest, it came in handy for stuff here in the fabulous, fabulous Horn Studio, and I didn't cut it out of protest. It was, you know, one of those things. But we seem to be surviving without it. Let's go to the Skype line. Larry has been waiting patiently. Hey, Larry.
Hey there. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Well, I'm doing fine. I was waiting online and waiting. And I called my sister. She has pneumonia, so we're hoping she gets better soon.
Oh, I do too.
And I don't know how it happened, but I found out through Facebook yesterday. And so in any case, Mandela. Mandela came to Oakland Coliseum, in 1991. When he was first released, and I got to tell you that, and KPFA or Pacifica Radio broadcast the whole speech, and that was really amazing. And I'll miss him a lot. He was really something. I'll also miss Desmond Tutu, who I haven't heard much of recently, but I knew someone that knew him really, really well, he's another really wonderful human being, so I don't want to forget Desmond Tutu, in addition to Mandela. I have to say that I listened to yesterday's program right after Mike Malloy, and I got to tell you, I really, really appreciated the interview you did with Mike, and that's amazing, the amazing story of what the West, was that the county jail that put him through that ordeal?
No, we kind of, we used to have county jails, Larry, but then, you know, the one world government crowd, I guess that's the way the Alex Jones people would describe it, wanted to go to regional government, and the first thing they wanted to put through were regional jails. So we have little hub mini prisons all over this state now. And the one that Mike was in is called South Central.
South Central.
And it is it's outside of Charleston, West Virginia. Then there's Southern outside of Beckley, Western outside of Huntington, Central up in, around, I think, can't even remember now. But the Northern, and it's a nightmare because it is horribly expensive for the county government to pay for, far more so than any jail. Transportation costs, daily rates, all of that stuff. And, of course, it has provided an opportunity for the sort of Abu Ghraibization, hillbilly Gitmoization of the prison industrial complex in this state.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, he was talking about Rock Creek, and I was trying to put two and two together and couldn't figure out what, you know. I don't know if he was staying in that area while he was in the state or...
No, no, Mike lives in Rock Creek.
Oh, okay. I gotcha. Okay, well, I have to tell you, that was a really good interview. I gotta tell you something. I think Ferg deserves a lot of credit for wanting to get out of that public school and to want to do the GEDs given what you mentioned about what he was going through in his high school. And that sounds like a horror story. And I hope he passes all of his GEDs.
He did. He did. By the way, it is official. He has passed.
Well, that's wonderful.
He is a GED recipient.
Great. So now you can think about, he can think about doing his applications in the various schools and, seeing, where he can get in. Depending, obviously, on what he wishes to study. So, that's good. But the other point that you made, you said that the leaders do not make history. It's not the hero, the hero mythology. That's a capitalist invention.
I don't know that it's a capitalist invention, Larry.
Or it's used by...
It is certainly used by, but it goes back. I mean, the Epic of Gilgamesh is an epic about one or two people. The armies of the Argives or the whatever in the Iliad are there, but it's still a story about Achilles and Agamemnon and Menelaus and Odysseus and Priam and Paris and Hector and Andromache, and you get the idea.
Yes, I do.
And it is absolutely diametrically different from many other myth structures throughout the world.
Well, and people can use these myths and can interpret them in a wide variety of ways, which I've experienced in my life. But none of these leaders would ever say, and I've talked to people that have went through the Black Panthers and knew people that were involved with them, and they said, we didn't do any of the things that we did for ourselves. We did it for our community and for our people, that our collective group would ultimately, prevail over the social and economic institutions and how they were constructed. And I have to say that that's what people with disabilities, such as myself, and other groups need to be able to do, and we need to be able to work collectively with each other. It's interesting that you were mentioning the kinds of things that in the Western Hemisphere, and I immediately thought about the Native American community when you were mentioning that name, and I don't know if I'm correct in assuming that. You also mentioned about words that people don't know that are people words that people use that are offensive that they don't know are offensive, and there are a lot of words that people use to refer to Native Americans that are deeply offensive, and they don't understand how they're offensive. So it's you know, and it's, and everybody, well, not everybody, but a good number of people fall into the traps of you know, using words, and I do myself, of using words, and we don't really understand where the context and where they come from. So,
and there's a, you know, there's a big difference, Larry, between using a word in ignorance and, on the other hand, knowing that a word is hateful, using it anyway, and then hiding behind the shield of, well, that's just because they might be politically correct. You know, that, I mean, a huge difference. And I go back to, oh gosh, there were a couple that got under my skin recently. It was just a couple of weeks ago and I was going on about it. But it's a function of trying to pay it, of being enough in love with language to try to find out what language is. And I'm certainly no Noam Chomsky, but no, not even a little bit. Hell, no.
Yeah.
But if I can look at things and wonder about it, if I have any misgivings at all, I'll try to take it out of my language. And you know, a lot of these things are words that are used epithetically, not even necessarily against the people whom they describe, but as a means of demeaning other people. Okay. Think, for instance, of childhood playground spats.
Yeah.
And the phrase Indian giver.
Yes.
Will be used. And it is a phrase that means to give something and then demand it back. And it's freighted, Larry, because really, we're going to use that against that as an insult against somebody who isn't native by comparing them to a native by saying that they are inherently dishonest? Excuse me? The people who took the land from the people who had the land? And we're... Oh, my God!
And these kids don't understand it because they've never been trained or because the history books conveniently leave out a big portion of Native American history and culture, if they cover anything at all. And that's why we need multicultural, multicultural education. I'll never, you know, not that I've used it, but there are words that people use. For instance, I found out, not that I've used it, the word squaw is a derogatory term. The word, Sioux is a derogatory term. And, you know, I didn't know that officially. Not that I would ever use it. Well, I would use Sioux, but, you know.
Yeah, oddly enough, a lot of those ethnic names came into English usage because we were talking to the other peoples who hated the people in question. So the word Sioux is a word that was used by people who had been made enemies of them when that is not their name. If you look to the American Southeast, the Creek Wars, of Andrew Jackson's time and David Crockett's time. Well, they never called them, you know, you didn't walk into a village and they said, hello, welcome to the Creek Village. Their name was Muscogee.
That's right. I met a professor who gave a speech here on the 14th of last month. Who is from the Muscogee tribe, who teaches at Haskell, it used to be the Haskell Institute, and now it's the Haskell, Indian National University in Lawrence, Kansas. And he's talking about a concept called indigenuity, where you take the best of Native American culture and use modern technology and try to marry them by working with engineers and people people who are well versed in engineering methods to try to use some of the ways that Native Americans have constructed homes or done certain things to the betterment of the society. So it's a way of introducing the society at large, or the dominant culture, to ways to be more sustainable. So he was talking about the concept of indigenuity. His name is Daniel R. Wildcat, and he co-authored a book with Vin Deloria, who no longer is with us, but was a big he was a theoretician and a minister and taught at University of Arizona. Well, you know, I'm getting exposed to a lot of this, and of course, your experiences up in Wisconsin when you were mentioning that you had a religious experience. Wisconsin?
Let's say spiritual.
Oh, spiritual experience. Was that up in Ashland, Wisconsin that you were? I can't remember where you were.
Yeah, I was in Ashland County, and then out on the Bad River Reservation.
Because I remember they were in the auditorium, and a number of the people came up to speak, and you were also on a panel.
Yeah.
And I'm also reading about the Powhatan Confederacy, and it's interesting to note that I'm trying to find out, you know, because I'm doing a paper on the story of the real Pocahontas and what really happened between Pocahontas and John Smith. And it's surprising to note that, shouldn't be surprising, that the myth that has grown up around Pocahontas.
Oh, I tell you, if you were to ever see, there's a couple of great big paintings in the rotunda of the United States Capitol, Larry, and two of them are so odious as to be sick making if you know anything about the actual history whatsoever. The rotunda of the United States Capitol is a sort of temple. And the ceiling of it has, similar to the Sistine ceiling, a huge mural of George Washington being carried aloft into the heaven by angels, and it's called the Apotheosis of George Washington. That's disgusting enough. But hanging on the walls are two particular paintings, one of which is DeSoto Discovers the Mississippi River, in which the proud Hernan de Soto is seen upon a stamping charger on a bluff overlooking the Mississippi, I guess somewhere near Memphis. And cowering at his feet is a trembling native. And it really, it'll just churn your gut if you know anything about DeSoto's ravaging march through the southeastern portion of the North American continent.
Uh-huh.
And then on the other side of the room is the Baptism of Pocahontas. And if you ever want to see anything that will just make you turn your guts inside out into a bucket, it's that.
Well, you know, she was kidnapped and raped. She was kidnapped and raped, and there are some reasonably new histories. And there's an ethnohistorian from Old Dominion University, who's now retired. Her name is Helen Roundtree, who's done a number of books on the Powhatan Confederacy and the tribes that made up that confederacy, or those that are still around. They only two of them are recognized by the state of Virginia. Two of the tribes, they're two tribes.
Yeah, see what happens when you start paying attention, Larry?
Yeah, then, you know, they have to get all, first, they, you know, then they have to figure out, they have to get a card to be able to, and then they have to show the card to prove that they're Native Americans. Then they test their, I mean, the kinds of things that people have to twist themselves around into in order to satisfy this government, the very government that oppressed them, is just mind-boggling. And I have to say that there are a couple of movies that are very interesting about the South African Truth Commission. It's called Country of My Skull, and there was a book that was written. I haven't read the book. I've got it here. I've had it here for many, many years, about the Truth Reconciliation Commission, and also about the Algiers, the Battle of Algiers, which I've seen a number of times. But getting back to how Native Americans have been treated, if I'd been treated in that fashion, no wonder I'd feel, I don't know how I would be psychologically after being treated in the manner that Native Americans have been treated in this society. And if you'd sat in on the course that I took on history and culture this semester, I mean, that to hear that history is enough to you would be bowled over, cubed, if you had to.
Yeah.
All the wars and all the, and that's what we heard about. Not very much about culture, not very much about the religion, not a lot of joy, but just about a lot of conflict and a lot of oppression. That's what it was. What else can I say? I wanted to say about the Powhatan Confederacy after the 17th century, even though people from those tribes still exist and they're still going strong, you don't hear very much about knew very, very much about them until, this time in history. I don't know very much about the Iroquois. I know a little bit more about the Plains Indians, because the Plains Indians, they were and the American Indian movement, that started in 1968, and they developed, I think, I remember, which I didn't know, but a lot of in the 1950s, after Collier passed away, John Collier, after he did the Indian Reorganization Act in the 30s, which was supposed to be helpful, then in the 1950s, the government terminated these tribes and tried to terminate all of them. Wisconsin was lucky. I think they were able to, was it Oregon? I can't recall. And then they had the relocation movement where they said, okay, fine, we're going to move people from the tribes into the cities. So they tried to urbanize Native Americans. So, that's part of the, and that's how
You know what? If we were on the air for the next 3 hours,
we probably
couldn't do the topic justice, Larry. The horrors that were visited, and this is on the people who were not rubbed out by disease or by intention, but by ostensibly what are the good intentions of white colonialism, whether it be the Indian schools. They did everything in their power to wipe out every last vestige of native language on this continent through
a
schooling process. Well, they did, but you know what? There are very real efforts involving teaching the remaining languages to children at the very beginnings of their lives now. And you know what? The importance of something like that cannot be overexpressed. Hey, Larry, I got to roll on because I want to get a couple more calls in. But I sure am glad that you Skyped in, man.
I'm appreciative, and I'm sorry that I take up so much time.
Well, don't apologize. You haven't taken up any time at all. This is what conversation radio is all about, my friend.
Thank you. You've got great callers. You know that, don't you? You've got the best callers.
Thanks, Larry.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye now. Our buddy Larry calling from the Bay Area. Thanks, Larry. I'm going right back to the phones. Let me check here. Had a note in from Dr. John pointing out something I had not mentioned this evening. Dr. John said, I'd like to give a big vote of thanks to the fast food workers in 100 cities that plan to or held a one-day walkout today in protest of the minimum wage that keeps hundreds of thousands in poverty. I've seen reports of 100 in New York, 100 in Detroit, and scores in Kansas City and Houston and L.A. It's not a numbers game. These workers are precarious by definition. I salute anyone who's willing to even talk about organization while working a minimum wage job. Power to the people. Going back to Dr. Mandela, Dr. John says, I first learned about Nelson Mandela in a course on South African history from Dr. Ibrahim at the University of Missouri. I was an undergrad from Southeast Texas and had no idea about apartheid. This was 1998. Dr. Ibrahim was from Sudan. I never tried so hard to impress a prof in my undergrad days. I was also the only white student, and I was perpetually embarrassed at what my people had done. I soaked up a lot of life lessons in that class. Later, I saw a photo of a city that was set up on the quad at Missouri in the 80s during the divestment movement. And now, says Dr. John, I'm wondering if it's even worth asking my students tomorrow what they know about Nelson Mandela. I would guess, Dr. John, and I would guess on behalf of the Horn Family Commune that you do ask, and that if you get blank stares, that you treat it as a teachable moment. Luta says, great conversation. We prefer Lakota, Dakota, or Nakota, but you can say Sioux. We call ourselves the Great Sioux Nation. Thanks. But you know what? It's nice to be able to go a layer deeper and understand people for who they conceive themselves to be. And Irish Dave pointed out a little bit ago, leaders do not make movements. Movements make leaders. And that reminded me of something. I'd hoped to get to the song this evening. There's a Johnny Clegg song out there called Asimbonanga. And it's beautiful. See if I can just get, a little bit. That gives you a sense of it, but I mentioned that because in talking about how movements make leaders, Johnny Clegg is a musician and formed a brilliant band that has traveled the world. But he has also been a professor of anthropology. And he taught at the University of Witwatersrand, I'm not sure which, studied there. And he was influenced by a man named David Webster. David Webster was assassinated on May the 1st, 1989, because he opposed apartheid. His home is now a memorial. He was shot dead outside his house by a hit squad of the Civil Cooperation Bureau, a covert South African government agency. They were paid 40,000 rands, about $8,000, for murdering him. For the crime of supporting freedom. Yeah. Those things are worth remembering. Back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Lord.
Hey, Kevin, how are you?
All right. Before I get too far in, Ray said something about Facebook earlier, and I didn't catch what it was he said. Someone was sick or something. I don't know. Actually.
Oh, yeah. His sister has pneumonia.
Ah, yeah. Well, my healthcare provider, she quit smoking about 3 weeks ago, and she's really having trouble breathing. I didn't have a stethoscope, but I've still got enough knowledge left to listen to her lungs. I put my face up, you know, my ear up to her back and tried to hear, but, you know, you couldn't hear anything. But I kind of sort of suspect she might have pneumonia. So, seems to be making a comeback as far as more and more people you're hearing about having that. I know a couple weeks ago, a friend of mine on Twitter, her sister was in the hospital with double pneumonia. So, I don't know. It couldn't have anything to do with all the antibiotics put into her meat. No, could it?
At this point in time, Kevin, who knows? And I'm not being a smartass. Who knows?
Exactly. You know, but it just seems to me... You didn't hear about pneumonia that much. It occurred mostly in elderly and children. And every so often you might hear of someone that you didn't consider elderly getting it. But nowadays, I'm hearing more and more of young people getting it, between 25 and 50, that are getting it. And so, you know, hopefully Larry's sister will recover and get back to doing what she does. And... So, anyway, you were talking about DeSoto. Of course, we have a county in Florida that's named after him, DeSoto County. So, he made his mark down there in Florida as well. And what you all were talking about with the children saying things like Indian Giver. You know, back at, especially in the early half of the 21st century, or the 20th century, the movies that depicted the Old West always depicted the Indians in a bad light. I can't think of one movie pre-1960 that depicted the Native American population as something other than savages. And Larry talking about Pocahontas, that myth has been put upon us. You know, where she supposedly went to the white man and converted and was baptized, you know, when you dig down deep between that one layer, it's like you said to Larry, you know, you get a little bit of a shock as you find out 99% of the myths that Americans today believe have no origin in truth, you know, and that's just extremely sad. And I know we're short on time, but I just wanted to comment on that because even with the Bashir firing, I know he resigned, but might as well have been fired. Even with that, what angers me about it is that anybody on the right that would have said something like that, at most, would have been taken off air for a day.
But that's the thing. Not even that. Hey, Kevin, I hate to say it, but I got to get out of here. I've got 30 seconds to clear for Rick Smith.
All right. Well, I'll let you clear then, and have a good evening.
All right. Take care. Bye now.
That's it.
All right. What a lovely evening. Thank you very much, all of you. Thanks for all the help. Thanks to Jug of Punch for helping out with fundraising this evening. We almost got to our fundraising goal for the night. Thank you very much, all of you, who keep all of this going. It's time for, Rick Smith is on the way. We'll catch you tomorrow for Friday on the Front Porch. Bye now.